Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being with us. It'll be an intimate group this afternoon. I thought we had done a good job by moving the session into the middle of the day because in previous years this has taken place in the evening, which is a little harder to get folks to attend. Thank you all for being here for the early career competition. My name is Brian Trader. I'm the Director of Domestic and International Studies at Longwood Gardens, and I'm currently the member at large for the society. Just a quick background information about the early career competition. This was really developed to help new faculty and new professionals communicate the impact of their extension, research, and teaching. The purpose of the competition is to really provide a platform for these new professionals in our industry to celebrate their work and to show the value that they're contributing to our society. This opportunity is available to postdocs, early career faculty, non-tenure track faculty, but also industry and government professionals as well. This is eligible for individuals who are within their first 5 years of their position. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce our candidates for the competition this afternoon. When I say your name, if you could stand and please be recognized. I'd like to say that this is a very distinguished group. We had a very positive response to our call for applications for the competition this year, and so these are the candidates that have been selected to present. So this is a list that's already been narrowed down, so they already should be celebrating and we should be congratulating them. So our first candidate who's going to speak this afternoon is Scott Lucas. Scott, please stand. And then we have Yopin Sun, if you'd please stand. Presenting third this afternoon is going to be Alyssa Cho. And rounding out the competition is going to be Steven Still. So how about a round of applause for our candidates? So just a couple housekeeping notes before I invite Scott to the stage. If everyone could just please take a moment to pull out their phones and ensure that they're on silent or vibrate so that we do not distract our audience members or our presenters today, I'd greatly appreciate that. Another thing, just as a reminder to our presenters, I'm gonna help you with your time. Timing is part of the evaluation for the judging. So when you have 5 minutes left, I'll let you know, try to make eye contact. When you have 2 minutes left, I'll stand so that you know of your timing. With that, I'd like to invite Scott Lucas to present Building a New Horticulture Program in the Columbia Basin of the Western United States, and Scott's representing Oregon State University. Please join me in welcoming Scott.
Sorry for the long title.
Good luck.
Well, thank you all for attending. My name is Scott Lucas. I'm assistant professor at Oregon State University, based at the Hermiston Ag Research and Extension Station. So today I'll be talking about, I've been with OSU for almost 3 years, so I'll be talking about that 3 year duration and how I've moved forward in developing a new horticulture program in the Columbia Basin. So a brief outline, I'll talk about a little bit of the situation of the previous horticulture program and the station where I'm at, and then how I developed some of my initial direction for moving forward and developing a program. And that will lead into my current projects and my current focus, and then some of the accomplishments and metrics that success in the industry and success a part of academia as well. And then the most important aspect is the team that is making this all possible. So OSU, within the College of Ag Science, we have experiment stations all throughout, strategically located throughout the state. And each of those stations services a unique agricultural commodity and industry specialized for that area. So I'm located up in the northeastern corner of the state at the Hermiston Ag Research and Extension Station, or as I'll refer to it as HARIC. So this is the irrigated ag station. And so it services approximately 120,000 hectares of irrigated cropping land. And this is primarily a potato area. But with the potato, there's the other rotational crops. And then there's also a huge diversity of other crops produced in this high-yielding region, over 200 crops. So the Herrick Horticulture Program was a historical program. And as of 2011, the faculty formally retired. Before that point, he was at part-time. So the program was slowing down, and then it stopped at 2011. About 5 years later, they refilled the position with myself in September 2016. And this is, as I said, assistant professor level with 55% research, 15 extension of those resulting in 20% scholarship with lead work and service as well. This position, much like a lot of other assistant professor positions, is a 9-month appointment, 1.0 FTE, with my responsibility to cover summer salary. So what happened in that period between the slowing down in 2010 and then the stop in 2011 to when I started was the program lost all its ties with the stakeholders. And that's an important aspect of continuity of a program. So I had to, there's positives and minuses with that. It was nice that I was able to have the opportunity to start a new program, and I was able to go at it with a fresh perspective and evaluate the current needs of the area. But it was hard to have lost that momentum that the previous program had. So I had to figure out where to go and how to get there. So I started originally by just trying to get out there and see who the stakeholders were and to let them know that I was here and that I was a new horticulturalist in the program. And I did this by trying to get into the newspapers, news articles, go to conferences, make phone calls, emails, which are challenging. Busy growers don't like to respond to email. But farm visits. And farm visits was a really, really beneficial aspect of how I was able to get out there and network and let the growers know. And then from that, I had this cohort of individuals and stakeholders. I was able to move forward with a needs assessment. And the needs assessment was based on individual discussions and then getting the commodity-specific groups together and doing focus sessions. Some of these were done through presentations with clickers, and some were just overall conversations. And what resulted from that was about what you would expect. Issues in water and nutrient use efficiency, weed control, a need for new cultivars, new crops, and then organic and sustainable production methods. And crops to focus on, again, I'm the horticulturalist, so I have a pretty broad range of crops to focus. Essentially, when I started the program, the only directive I had was don't work on potatoes, because we already have potato researchers, and no field crops. So basically, if it grows in a row and it's not a potato, that's under my jurisdiction. So onion, watermelons, corn, broccoli, hemp, carrots, blueberries, a whole assortment. And then I had to figure out with all these needs and all these crops, how do I bring it together and have a priority to move forward? So this leads me to my research theme, which is currently to enhance irrigated hort production systems while promoting environmentally centered approaches. And on a similar line, my extension theme is to provide educational opportunities to the stakeholders and practical and applied recommendations based on the research. And it's nice to have this complement of research and extension because I could couple the two programs together nicely. So that leads to some of the focal projects I'm working on, and that's reducing losses of ag use products, increasing product efficiency, and introducing new crop options. So as I go through each of these, I'll be talking about three certain focal projects. As I go through them, I'll list the focus, which is essentially the situation or the issue, and then my approach, and then the outcomes would have come from that project. So the Lower Umatilla Basin, where I'm located, is a classified groundwater management area, and this is a result of nitrogen leaching from a numerous amount of sources, but a lot of the fingers that are being pointed are towards irrigated agriculture. And I know it's hard to read, but the big section of that pie chart is the believed contribution of irrigated ag producers, so that's 70%. 60% of the wells in this area have a nitrate concentration that are above the state mandatory threshold. And the current monitoring indicates that the nitrate is not declining. So, as with many other agricultural regions, this leads to greater scrutiny on producers. So my approach, because this problem took 30 years to build, it's not going to be solved overnight. I approached it on a long term, which was organizing a larger collaborative group so we could all join forces together. And then on the short term, because I also have to go up for tenure, I can't do that with a 30-year outcome, is smaller projects like optimizing irrigation methods for crop production systems to try to optimize soil moisture and reduce nitrate leaching. So some of the outcomes here, on the long term, I currently initiated and lead a USDA NEFA collaborative project. And this was a big accomplishment for me because put together a lot of diverse entities. And so this collaborative project has brought together 3 OSU experiment stations, representatives from 3 state agencies, 2 counties, 4 cities, 2 soil and water conservation districts, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, private organizations, irrigation districts, and numerous stakeholders. And of this area and this problem being building for 30 years, this is the first time that everyone has gotten together at the table and looked forward collectively. And so this was a big step in terms of sharing what we already know and how to move forward. And on the short term, I am doing, as I mentioned, irrigation optimization. So I've identified parameters and recommendations for subsurface drip irrigation in coarse soiled onion production. And this was previously, the growers thought that it wasn't possible because the sand, the soil is so coarse that drip irrigation wouldn't be feasible. So based off of the preliminary data, some of the growers were looking at the trials and they invited me to then do field trials at their locations, which I felt was an important metric of the success of the experiment. It also led to additional funding, and I've been invited to speak on occasions regarding the subject. Second focus is about reducing production inputs. These farms are very large scale, 800 hectares on average. So you can imagine if you have a conventional farm and you have an incomplete program for pest management or weed management, that's hand labor to come in and clean it up, and that's nearly prohibitive. So I was focusing on new products, and then they're also over-applying establishment crop protection projects just as a safety net, essentially. And I think this was due to a lack of training and opportunities for training regarding some of these certain applications. So I approached it by looking at new weed control chemistries in a variety of crops, looking at ways to reduce treatments, establishment treatments by utilizing seed treatment. And then also looking at the sustainable side and the organic growers introducing options for soil-borne pathogen control. So the outcomes here, I've been working with some onion growers and we've identified a couple new chemistries with reduced rate active ingredients. Regarding sweet corn seed treatments, we've been able to make a regionally specific set of seed treatments that is most active in our area for combating some of the pathogens, which is reducing total chemical usage, so they're not doing broadcast sprays. I've been looking at the drip-injected organic alternatives to the soil-borne pathogen control. And then I've been lately been looking at new grafting techniques to reduce the current cost of grafting of watermelon plants, which is a big barrier in our region. So some of the, and then regarding the training courses, that is something I host multiple times per year. And I look at kind of the overall picture of chemical, new chemistries available, calibration, drift reduction, and just new methods of applying. So everyone's on the same page and they're all trained and appropriately applying these chemicals safely. And then third, which is an exciting part of this position, is looking at the option for new crops. As I mentioned, it's a potato production region with a 4-year rotation of wheat, corn, onion, all around potato. But growers know that if it's a down year or if there's something that is limiting production, they're reliant on these 4 crops. So they want more options to increase the system stability. So, and the diversity essentially is stability and viability. So I've approached this by looking at a variety of different crops such as broccoli, saffron was exciting, squash, late blooming almonds that might fit the region's profile. And this has been extremely helpful building relationships with growers, because it's allowing me to interact with them and see their interests and then me to be working on them. And then furthermore, it's opened up the lines of communication with the processors who I ordinarily wouldn't be working with, because the growers could grow whatever they think is interesting, but unless the processor has the market for it, they won't go anywhere. So it's allowed me to open up kind of a greater line of communication. And then the production protocols I've introduced have now been applied in some of the growers' fields. So this year there's a grower, he's put in 40 acres of broccoli, and it's the first broccoli produced in the region. So on to some of the more accomplishments from a scholarly and the extension perspective. I've published two extension publications, both pest management oriented. I currently have two in preparation. And I've engaged with numerous amount of stakeholders in terms of bringing them out and doing on-farm field demonstrations, and that has led to on-farm trials on their farms. So research station to actual on-site. As well as really, really supportive letters from the growers for a lot of the proposals I've submitted. And there weren't just pre-programmed letters where I wrote it and they just signed. They actually wrote the letters, which meant a lot for me. In terms of the conference session and more education, I organized the Pacific Northwest Vegetable Association conference, the vegetable session, and I've done that for the past 3 years. It's about 700 participants per year, as well as the Hermiston Farm Fair, which is around 500 folks per year. And in that, I do a number of sessions, which grows yearly. It somewhat overwhelms me to even look at the list now. So I do the hemp session, vegetable session, organic session, along with the core pesticide session. And this year, we were noticing that, or last year we noticed that there was an audience that was not represented. So this year we're doing a core pesticide session in Spanish. And this issues core credits to a three-state region. Also lots of site visits for growers, and they come to the station a lot, because when you're on campus, growers don't like to swing by the campus and go to the parking lot and go up the staircase, but at a research station, they could pull up to the front door and go knock on your door, which is great. It really helps that line of communication. So a lot of also court questions, which this season has been about 80% hemp, because everyone's doing it. In terms of scholarship, I've had 6 peer-reviewed publications, 2 currently in draft. I've mentioned the extension publications. In terms of presentations, 21 regional, 6 national, and 2 international. Out of the 8 successful proposals that I've submitted, I've been the lead on 7 of them, and the total funding to date awarded is close to $1.4 million. To my program directly is $625,000. I have some pending, which I'm crossing my fingers for. And then, of course, lots of rejection, and the hard part, $14.4 million not funded. However, 4 of these were big federal grants, and I am revising them now, and I hope to be resubmitting them in upcoming years. OSU Extension Award as well. But really, what makes this all possible is the team. And this is the area of the program that I was excited for, but I didn't realize the impact it would have on myself and my professional development. And it's been a really positive experience for me. It's been challenging being at an off-campus research station because we don't have access to the traditional student base that you would find on campus. So it's been a little difficult, but it's been really positive. So I currently am an advisor for 1 master's student and a co-advisor for another. I'm on 3 graduate student committees. This summer, I was really fortunate to get the funding to hire a research technician, and that has been a really huge help in terms of moving my program and helping with some of the crop management. Because before that, you're writing, you're doing field work, and you're just all over the place. So it's been really nice to have someone else on the ground helping me organize this. Along with that, have summer interns. Some of them are from the main campus at OSU, and then lately we've been working with the local community college and getting some precision ag interns for there. Along with that, local high school students have been helping the program, and then temporary assistants for surge times like harvest. So without them, there would be no horticulture program. So in conclusion, it's been really rewarding to see this program finally gaining traction. It felt like I was just slipping for the first couple years, and then it finally starts to happen and to move forward, and that's been a really rewarding feeling for myself, and I think it's been nice for the growers also to see that the program is resulting in impact. And it's been a huge learning curve. There's so many hats that we have to wear in a position like this. You know, we accounting and management of people and HR and research and writing. There's so many things that really aren't taught in education. So it's been a learning curve, and there's been a lot of success and a lot of failure. And I hope to have learned from the failure as well. But overall, I love the position. I love the people I work with. Great colleagues, and I am just really excited to move forward and continue building these relationships as I go. So with that, thank OSU and my department, the faculty and staff at the station, the students, and the regional growers who really make all of this happen. And I'm happy to take any questions if you have them. Thank you.
We have time for questions. Any questions for Scott?
Yes.
Very nice presentation. What the message, you know, for attracting graduate students? Well, we have two graduate students now, and we have several volunteers. But in the near future, could the graduate students take classes on main campus, right? 1 year maybe in the course or something. Mm-hmm. But what do you think would be approaches for attracting graduate students to your location?
So the question was, what would be approach being off station to attract students, being that there is a 5-hour commute between main campus and where I am? And yes, you're correct. It's usually the traditional method for a master's student is to spend 1 year on campus. We've been working to try to get funding to get a smart room in our research station so it could link up to campus a little more efficiently, which is still challenges. But, you know, I don't have a great answer. I've been trying to advertise my program and be flexible with students and just to be straightforward with them and saying that, you know, it is a research station that's remote, but we can work out a schedule and we can work out a research schedule, and I've been collaborating with faculty on campus, so not only would I be a main advisor, but they would have an advisor that's overseeing them while they're on campus, and they're kind of away from my program, per se. So I think it's been a lot of flexibility and just communication to help facilitate moving forward.
Scott, I have a question about your Pesticide credit offerings that you put into place this past year with the Spanish language. Can you talk a little bit about that and who you collaborated with to offer that? Or are you bilingual? Okay,
so the question was regarding the pesticide training and the core curriculum for pesticide continuing education credits, and then how I went out with the Spanish lessons. So that's, we realized that there was a need for this. We did it for a few years, and you know, a lot of the people who are applying and the applicators are of Hispanic origin. And we were starting to pull them after the English session and saying, did you get all of this? You know, some of this information is very dense. And they definitely weren't getting it all. They would get the credits, but they wouldn't get the information. So I worked with some of the Spanish faculty on campus, and then I worked with the city of Hermiston, and they have some interpreters as well. I speak some Spanish, but not at a level of explaining calibration. They would be better hearing it in German or some other language than my Spanish of mathematics. So it was really just trying to reach out to people who, one, had an interest, two, had knowledge to do it, and then that's kind of how it came together. Thank you.
We have time for one last question.
It's early, but of your possible crops, have you any thought of what might go into the 4-year rotation when we come out?
The question is, of the potential crop introductions, what might fit into that traditional rotation of corn, wheat, onion, and potato? So there has been some broccoli. Broccoli is interest, especially when they're doing a winter wheat. You could come in a little later in the summer and do a double crop. So broccoli is an appealing option for some of the growers. There's a lot more work to be doing regarding hemp, but in Oregon this year, there's an estimated 40,000 acres of hemp going into production. So there might be potential. There has been some studies overseas that have said that there is a benefit for potato cropping after hemp. So that's an option as well. So far it's just been the broccoli that we've had success with. But lots of options.
Please, let's thank our presenter. Thank you, Scott.